Joining me now on the November edition of Our Town is Boomer Wright. He's our freshman representative there up in Salem. So it's been a while. How was the first year?
Well, I would have to say that overall it was definitely a learning experience. And I wasn't by myself. There were a number of newbies, as they call us, up in Salem. And, you know, it reminded me years ago of when I first took over as principal at the middle school. And I was there a couple of days, and the staff, we had a staff meeting, and so the staff presented me this present, and it was a picture of a cowboy, and he had his hat pulled down, and it was kind of dusty and dirty, and, you know, he hadn't shaved in 4 or 5 days, and he had a kind of frown on his face, and he had a coat on that was kind of, you know, worn and frazzled, and the caption underneath was, you know what, he says, there's a lot of things they didn't tell me before I took on this job. Yeah. and that's basically the way it is, being up at the legislature as a new person is kind of like baptism by fire. But it was all worthwhile. I enjoyed almost all of it. It was probably the most frustrating and exhilarating thing I've ever done.
I guess because, you know, they're being the majority of the representatives are Democrat, and there's a few Republicans in there. And, of course, we always hear about, you know, the scuttles. You know, we don't always hear about how everyone got together and made stuff happen. What are some of the things that were worked on this last year that you feel was a good accomplishment?
Well, I think the focus particularly on my one committee, the Behavioral Health Committee, is you know, Oregon is about 48th in the country in supplying behavioral health, mental health services. And so we spent a considerable amount of time passing bills that related to teen suicide, mental health problems in general. The bill we eventually passed to the tune of about almost $500 million to be able to get services all over the state, whether it has to do with crisis teams, sobering centers, crisis centers, equipment for crisis teams. Like here in town, I was given 3 days to assess what the needs were for this district from Coos Bay all the way up to Yahas for behavioral health. And my initial estimate was $60 million. And that's just to get us started. Here in town, they're organizing a crisis team and have one, but they need a vehicle. So I put in for the vehicle, and we'll see what happens. I'm hoping that DHS and OHA will come down and be able to give us what we need here to get us started. I spent a considerable amount of time down in Coos Bay looking at the new homeless shelters that they are providing, little tiny homes. I'm really encouraged about that basically many of the communities along the coast are already doing things. So my job, I believe, is just to support that and give them other resources to be able to grow, help that to grow.
Now, a few months ago, I talked to Dick Anderson on the other side of that, and he was talking about the difficulties in allocating money for the coast because, you know, it seems like it's an underserved community as far as the finances go sometimes. He talked about committees that got together and worked together. Is that same thing happening on the representative side?
Yes, it is to a certain extent. I think Senator Anderson is correct. We are underserved. You know, with the idea that you have 37 Democrats and 23 Republicans, and the majority of those Democrats are from the Portland area, so their focus is going to be to be able to provide service not only for their base but for Portland in general, and sometimes in their efforts to help their constituents, they could kind of forget about us. We're kind of the child down here that people come to see whenever they want to come to the coast, whenever they want to enjoy themselves, come to the dunes, without recognizing that we need to provide services, we need jobs here to be able to keep the coast the way they are. I think that's one of the major problems, and that is we forget the human element a lot, particularly when we're talking about environmental issues, whether you need the balance in the legislature, so ideas can be shared, whether it's Republican or conservative or a Democrat, liberal, whatever. Ideas need to be shared, and within the environmental concerns along the coast, there are environmental concerns, absolutely, but there are also human concerns. I was reading a book not long ago by the gentleman who wrote, who organized and developed Greenpeace, and he left Greenpeace because they became so radical concerning leaving the human element out. I mean, yes, there is. We need protections for species, but there's another species we need to be concerned about, and that is the human element along the coast and in the country in general.
Well, and the human element along the coast assists in providing services for those urban areas when they want to play.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a big playground for a lot of them.
Yes.
I mean, for us, it's where we work and it's where we survive and where we live.
Right.
But, you know, we also know that, you know, we get a lot of benefit from those who come from the urban areas.
Right. And if you look at things like Jordan Cove, and you may or may not agree about Jordan Cove and whether it should have come into Coos Bay, but shouldn't Coos Bay and Coos County have the right to decide things somewhat on their own? I mean, if in fact they can work it out with their constituents there in Coos Bay, but they didn't have a chance to do that. Shutter Creek, which closed, which we worked very hard with the governor to try to convince her to keep it open. No, that with ballot measure 11 and also measure 110, they feel like we don't need those facilities like we used to. Okay, maybe that's true and maybe it isn't. We're going to find out. I always think that what I've observed so far in the legislature is we tend to put the cart in front of the horse. We passed, we put the on the ballot measure 110, which said that we're going to be a nicer people toward those who are having struggles with substance abuse. And in fact, we have incarcerated many of them and felt like that shouldn't happen. But the problem is that if that's true, that we need to do that, and the voters said, yes, we need to do that, okay, and then we've lessened the criminal charges on people and said, okay, if you're caught with substance abuse or with drugs on you, that we're going to give you a ticket for $100 and you can call in and get help. But the problem is, yeah, there's a place to call in, but to get services,
there's no mandate. Though,
we don't have the services yet.
Right.
So it's a lot like what I thought happened with Obamacare, and that is, we kept the system somewhat the way it was, and we added all these people onto it without ever thinking about, well, we need more doctors, we needed more nurses, you know. Maybe we need somewhat of a GI Bill like my father had after World War II to be able to come in and solicit more people into the medical health field. We need them. Not only that, of course, plumbers, carpenters, welders, handyman, and women, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need those kinds of things. So I think people are starting to wake up. I was at down in Coos Bay a couple days ago, actually on Saturday, and talked to a group of people that are organizing to teach students trades in those fields that we definitely need for blue collar. So I think things are changing. It's always amazing to me, if I look back over my 31 years in education, in particular here in Florence, that the pendulum for education swings way one way and then back the other. You know, for a long time we were vocational ed, right? I went through that. You had all kinds of opportunities. We had construction classes. We had all kinds of welding and carpentry. Fortunately, Siuslaw kept those kinds of things to a certain extent, and thank God for that. But all of a sudden, that pendulum swung back in about the late 80s that basically said everybody needs to go to college, and they push people that direction. Well, we understand now what that causes. And again, right, we're getting back to balance. We need trades, and we need people who go to college in 4 years or whatever, or maybe even just 2 years to community college. But we need to have options for all kids.
Well, and again, there is a definite there's a definite mindset that differentiates between the blue collar and the trades and the educational system, even down to work ethic, I think, what it goes to. And I don't think kids, I think, like you said, kids in the 80s to the 90s, said, well, I need to be educated. I need to be educated. And then they came away with these huge, gigantic bills,
yeah.
while the guy who took plumbing or welding in school is, you know, out there making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000
yeah.
a year
yeah.
with no debt.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other things you want to talk about, like the housing issue. It's a big deal here on the coast.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
And even the houses we're building today are not going to be in the range where an hourly employee necessarily can afford it. And we have a lot of hourly employees because of the tourist trade that we have down here.
Yeah.
Is the legislature dealing with some potential answers for that?
You know, there really hasn't been a lot. I know that we had one bill passing concerning zoning, which is a big factor. And basically saying that we're going to allow multifamily facilities, homes being built in a single family groupings. I think we need to protect both. So we'll see what happens there. I was in a forum the other day concerning I'm down in Gold Beach where they're building or allowing to be built what they call ADUs, which is just auxiliary housing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put a mother-in-law suite on top of your garage or put something that's attached for another part of your family. And as we look at the baby boomers who are really starting to retire now and then in the next 10 years are going to be retired, we need places for them. And many of them don't want to go to a home. They want to stay in a facility to be able to, you know, their family can take care of them as long as they're within in reason that the family can care for them. So I think that that's something that we need to look at. I think we just need, like everything else, we need more options. People need more options. And we need to be able to figure out ways. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about what young people really want. And basically, they don't need a huge home. They need a home that has two bathrooms and two bedrooms to raise their family. They don't need 2,500 feet. They're okay with 1,500 feet. So we need to think about how we build those types of home. I mean, the tiny home industry is exploding right now because people have decided they don't need those big homes. Now, for those who do, wonderful. But for young families getting out, we don't need to do that. The other thing that concerns me about housing is that the legislature and the federal government, in their infinite wisdom, have decided that we need to pour money into people who are renting, and that's fine. During the COVID, we lost jobs and those kinds of things, so we need to help people. To a certain extent, what we forgot is when we help people who are with money for rent or to live because of COVID, we have forgotten we need to take care of the landlords too, because if we don't, then they won't continue to rent. That they will sell their homes, and that's exactly what's happened. That's why we also have a rental crisis. People don't want to rent because right now they can't get people to pay their rent.
Right.
Now, I'm being general, okay, because there are plenty of people out there who pay their rent and do a wonderful job, and that's why we'll continue to have rentals. But to a certain extent, we forgot to subsidize also the landlords in making sure that, you know, they have to pay their mortgage, they have to pay their bills too. And there are a number of people who have retired and had duplexes. They bought duplexes or triplexes, and that is their retirement. So we forgot about that too. We need to take care of those people. So until we start thinking about balance again and making sure that we help one people, that we also help the other side too.
We had a pretty extensive fire season this year. You were involved in that committee as well that handled those emergency services. Are we making any headway on how to protect us in the following years?
Well, we got a new state forester here this last week, Cal Mukamoto, and we'll see. I'm hoping that he'll make some changes in the state forestry and how we manage our forests. I think a big problem that we're going to have to address is the federal forests. They're not being maintained correctly as far as even on state standards. And so many of the fires that have occurred have come out of federal forests and then leak into the state forests. So I think we're going to have to do something concerning the federal forests and making sure that they do their job. Because right now, I don't think they are. And I'm real concerned.
And we don't have the resources to do their job.
Yes. We need... You know, instead of closing down the forest, we need multi-use forest. We need people to be able to go in and you know, have bike trails and have walking trails and have camping areas and those kinds of things. We need multi-use forests. We have people who really have been kept out of the forest simply because of certain species and protection. Well, if I look at what was happening with the Elliott Forest and how Oregon State was going to manage that forest, that's what it was. It was a multi-use forest. Now, whether or not that continues, I mean, you know as well as I do that Oregon State decided not to take ownership of the Elliott, but what basically happened is that they still like to manage it. So we'll see what happens there. I in talking to Oregon State, one of the things I said is that, you know, I can be supportive as long as when you do this research project that we take a good look at what are the best practices for management that we can make multi-use forests. And they said that was their goal, so I'm going to keep them at their work.
And again, this goes back to the other species you were talking about earlier, the
correct
human aspect of it that we need to include in our planning.
Right.
And not just the animal species,
correct,
as well.
And I think we need to look at what's happening with our coast with, say, the major components, whether it's tourism and timber and fishing. Those are our biggies along the coast. I was at Morgan Creek Hatchery. You need to go down there, George Henry. It is an amazing place out of Coos Bay. It's the major hatchery on the coast, except for the Columbia. And we're talking about California, too. So it's an amazing place run by, it's essentially a nonprofit that run by the STEP program. And they gather the fish and put in anywhere from 9 to 20 million eggs in the river out of Bandon, the Rogue, and the Coos River. Hopefully we'll get some in the Coquille pretty quick because there's definitely a problem there. But we're talking about the survival of a species, and unfortunately my concern with the ODF&W is that they're looking for continuing the native species without understanding that we need abundance. You know, nature in general says if there's a problem, all of a sudden she starts producing. And what we're not doing right now is we're not producing enough fish for abundance, because not only do we need them to make this to help the species survive, but we also need them for the fishing industry, whether that is commercial or angling, which basically is a $3 to $4 billion economy. Provides that on the coast. So that's real important, and I think we're going to work real closely with the ODF&W and making sure they understand that we really need the abundance issue addressed.
All right, we're running close on time here, so I just want to give you an opportunity. Is there anything else that's in your mind that you think we need to get out right now and talk about?
Well, other than I'm here to serve. I mean, that's my job, is to serve. So people who have concerns can get a hold of me, can go to my website, just type in Boomer Rights at the Oregon State Legislature, and it'll go get right there. I love input, whether you like what I do or you don't like what I do, but I need to hear those things. So don't hesitate to get a hold of me, send me an email, give me a call. I really appreciate it. And if you have ideas concerning legislation that we should have. What's wrong with the state? What's right with the state? Let me know, and then I can go ahead and produce that legislation. I can only put in two bills this time in the short session in February, and right now both of those are going to be toward behavioral health. But in the long session, I can put in as many bills as necessary in 2023. And yes, George Henry, I'm going to run again.
Well, I'm thinking there's lots more that we could talk about, corporate activity taxes,
all absolutely.
Those certain things. Maybe we'll get you back in here and we can do that soon.
I would really enjoy that. Thank you, George Henry.
All right, Boomer Wright, thank you so much. Coming up in the next hour, we'll start things with the Kiwanis. We'll talk about Thanksgiving.